Hello and welcome to Proud to Be You, the alumni podcast from Boston University. I'm your host, Jeff Murphy. I love doing this podcast. And if you like what we're doing with this show, I hope you'll take just a minute and subscribe to our newsletter for giveaways and bonus content. You can do that now on our website at bu.edu/proudtobeyou. We have a very special episode today, catching up with two of my favorite BU people of all time, Jenny Gruber and Anthony Harrison. Both of them were on our first season of the Proud to Be You podcast more than 5 years ago. They've both gone on now to serve as the current and former presidents of the Boston University Alumni Association, and we thought it might be an interesting exercise to reflect on where they were back then, how their lives have shifted these past few years through things like a global pandemic and political instability, the ever-evolving world of work, and what's changed or what hasn't changed for them with their personal and professional goals.
Proud to Be You showcases the journeys of some of Boston University's most interesting and accomplished alumni. Inspiring grads share the highs, the lows, and the challenges they've overcome along the way, from Comm Ave to innovative careers. No matter where your path takes you, be proud to be you.
Jenny and Anthony, thank you so much for coming back to the Proud to Be You podcast. I have been very fortunate to stay in touch with both of you at regularity over the last 5 years since we've talked, but I'm so thankful that the two of you could make time today to do this with all of us together.
Absolutely excited to be here. Can't believe it's been 5 years.
Same. Thanks for setting this up.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. So obviously, we just touched on this. It's been 5 years. And as I was driving my way to the BU campus this morning, thinking about the chat that we were all going to have, I was thinking about, on my end, the world feels like quite a different place from the last time that we were all, you know, doing interviews together. I'm thinking about things like a global pandemic. I'm thinking about things like some declining trust in institutions like government and media. I am thinking about global terrorism and war and climate crisis. And I'm wondering, the place that I wanted to start for both of you, what have these last 5 years been like? And what has the impact been on your career? Have you, I'm guessing for so many of BU community members and alumni, a change in values and what you want out of your career. And so I wanted to hear from both of you, you know, what the last 5 years have been like. So Jenny, how about you? You're still at NASA at the Johnson Space Center. How are things the same or different?
Yeah, so from the standpoint of all of the things you mentioned, making us think about our place in the world a bit more, my aspirations and my passion have not changed. I maybe feel even more that I want to inspire the next generation. And when I'm out doing outreach, you know, I'm maybe trying to inspire young people to come work for NASA, but I'm also quite happy to be inspiring, you know, the climate engineer that's gonna save us all, if that's the case, right? So it just makes me think more about the importance of the work that I'm doing and how it both directly and indirectly impacts the what's going on in the world. On a more tactical level, we have certainly gotten into the work from anywhere strategy. And as a manager, I'm very open to welcoming and appreciating all of my people in general. And so when somebody has to work remotely, we make that easy. We're working very hard to do hybrid the right way. And I just have to make sure to reach out to my employees who don't come in a little bit extra. That doesn't bother me. From a personal standpoint, as the mom of a teenager who's going through some things, it's definitely a lot easier for me to be able to work from home a couple of days and only come into the office 3 days a week. So that's sort of all levels of how things have changed for me in the past few years.
How about you, Anthony? You were working for a pretty infamous social media company the last time we talked. Where do things stand with you and all that you just talked about?
I was sort of snickering as Jenny's talking, as her world has been, for the most part, pretty consistent and stable. Mine has been completely turned upside down, right? I was going into the office at Facebook 5 days a week. I was commuting each way over an hour and then working long hours. And that just felt normal, right? Like I'd start my day at six and I'd end my day at six if I was lucky. And now that's completely upended, right? This has been my office pretty much for the last 4 years, which has been nice. The flexibility has been amazing. The learnings that come with that flexibility have been amazing. The shifting in priorities, for me personally, the focus on personal and mental and physical health and well-being. I left Facebook very early in the pandemic. And when I left and looked back, I was like, how the hell did I do that? That was not sustainable on many, many levels. An exciting job, a challenging job professionally, but it came with a lot of sacrifices personally that I just didn't want to make anymore. And so for me, the shift has been more about balance and prioritization, work hard, play hard, having fun, connecting with the people that are important to me, whether it's virtually or in person. And really, as I look at my late stage career, kind of figuring out what's important to me in those late stages. And that's very different than what was important to me 5 years ago, for sure.
So, Anthony, I want to dive in a little bit deeper to your story about what's been happening in your career. When we last spoke to you on this podcast, you had made a couple comments referencing that a person of your age ought to be or might be thinking about winding it down, was I think the term that you used. And so I wanted to hear more about your decision to leave Facebook and where you've gone from there. I'm guessing that you probably had to sign like an NDA of some kind. So I don't know if you can tell us about your departure, but how did you decide what were you going to do after that?
Well, that assumes that I have decided, which I don't think I necessarily have.
Yeah.
But I definitely, I basically face planted and had to leave Facebook. It just, as I said, it was unsustainable. And I had actually planned on taking like 6 months off and just kind of regrouping. But I ended up finding a new opportunity with a smaller company that was incredibly exciting and too good to be true. And so I stepped into that just a couple of months later. And it was dramatically different. It was a smaller company. It was 100% virtual. I was managing a global team that I didn't meet anyone, including my boss, until I had been working there for a year. And I had never had that experience before. That was just like unfathomable. But it made me really think about and focus on how do you build connection? How do you build relationships? It doesn't have to happen in person, right? It can happen virtually if you put the time and energy into it. And so that was kind of fun to kind of learn. Well, instability is the name of the game. And so that company got bought by a private equity firm 2 years later, and I was laid off, as often happens. And so I find myself thrown into the chaos at the time of the job market in the Bay Area in technology. And I was just like, all the old rules and tools didn't work anymore, right? And so I had to be flexible and nimble and introspective and analytic and all of this stuff. And it took over a year to find a new job, which I just started a new gig a couple of months ago. But in that year, again, at this point in my life, personally and professionally, what I was looking for and what I wanted in a job changed dramatically. And it was about balance. It was about focusing on the things that I'd like to do and that I do well. It was about giving up the dream of being the top dog and recognizing, you know what, I'm a really good number two And I'm okay with that. And people need a good number two, and that's the role I'm going to play. And it was about thinking about, like, I got to put a pin in it. I can't just sort of say, oh, I'll end whenever. It's like, I need to put a pin in it and say, I'm going to stop working full time in 3 years. What that means after that, TBD, I'm trying to sort that out. But I feel good about that decision to say I'm going to, I guess, retire in 3 years. And I'm excited and scared and all the stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been a tumultuous 5 years for sure. But there's been tremendous personal and professional growth through the 5 years. And so it feels really good. And I feel really good about where I am right here and right now.
I want to ask you more about this 3-year plan, but I also, knowing you as I have, you had told me there were like so many different directions you could have gone after, you know, your layoff from that smaller organization. You have all of these interests in your life, all these things that you want to do. You obviously still have so much energy and gas left in the tank. How were you weighing out those options?
That's a really good question. It was sort of clearing away the noise and really sort of looking inside and figuring out what was most important to me. And what is most important to me is to be of service. And being of service can take many, many different forms. And it was being open to the fact that there could be multiple simultaneous paths, right? Like, being of service can be coaching, which is what I've been doing a little bit. Being of service can be mentoring. Being of service can be volunteering. Being of service can be working as a docent at, you know, a local museum. And so it's sort of figuring out, like, cobbling together, what are the things that are going to give me a reason to get up and jump out of bed and that are going to play to my strengths and my interests. And so the 3-year plan is to kind of refine what those things might be. I suspect, knowing myself, it's not going to be one single thing, that it'll probably be multiple things, but that's okay. And it'll also probably be a little bit of things, right? Like, I have no desire to continue to fill 8 hours every day doing anything, right? I'm going to enjoy traveling with my husband and just having fun. So, but I also know I want to do stuff that's going to be fun and interesting for me. You know, the good news is retirement isn't what it was for our parents. The bad news is retirement isn't what it was for our parents, right? Yeah. When there are no rules, it can be scary and intimidating. And I feel like there are no rules, but that's also exciting and stimulating. And so I need to figure out what are my rules and what's going to work for me.
And that's what that's the question I wanted to ask you. You know, again, 5 years ago, I know this was already, you were coming up with this plan, that now you've made this decision that, like, 3 years, that will be, you know, you'll enter a very different phase of your life, whether you'll still be doing tons of things. But you mentioned being excited and afraid. I'm wondering, what are those big questions that are still in front of you as you think about reaching that stage of your life? And professionally, are there sort of things that you still feel like you need to accomplish to sort of cement your legacy as the PR Swiss Army knife that I know you?
the second question is actually easier. Like, no, I've done all that I've wanted to do professionally. I feel very good and confident about that. There are some things I wish I had the opportunity to do, but I don't feel like I've missed out by not having done them, right? So that being able to sort of say that confidently and comfortably opens up the door to a ton of other possibilities, right? Like, I don't need to check any more boxes in terms of my chosen career. And so now it's kind of figuring out what are the other things. And as I said, the things that when I look at the outside of professional stuff that I've done the last couple of years that has given me great joy, it has been the coaching, the mentoring, the being of service, right? And the recognition that There's something from my career path as an openly queer LGBTQ member of the Black community that can benefit other people as a first gen student that can benefit other people. And, you know, I've navigated some things in good ways and sometimes bad ways, and people can learn from the bad as well as the good, right? And so I think a lot about how I can share my experience in a way that is useful to other people, to younger people at different periods, different points in their career.
Yeah. Well, Anthony, again, having gotten to know you pretty well over the last few years, you've helped me to think about how I'm going to be at the end of, you know, my working days and as I approach that stage in my life. So, I'm really glad that you could share some of that with our listeners.
Absolutely.
Jenny, you and I are a little bit dissimilar from Anthony in that we are both lucky enough to be at the same organizations, having ridden out the pandemic and all of those things. Interestingly, when we last interviewed you, you made a couple references to things being starting to get hectic. Different projects you were working on at NASA were taking you in different directions. And I know that today finds you in kind of a similar place.
Yes.
Has it
Yes.
just been nonstop chaos? You know, is that because it's a government organization? It's because of all the changes in the world, but how has it been going for you?
Chaos in the best way. You know, 5 years that when we talked, I guess a little over 5 years ago now, I had just left flight operations where I had the majority of my technical career and got my start as a manager. I had spent 16 years there. And more because I co-opted there. I mean, I just, you know, that had been my whole career. And I had a huge mindset change when I left there. And in the last 5 years, and really even within a year of leaving, started to understand that my workplace values now are that I need to be contributing to something that is bigger than myself. And I have been working on the Artemis campaign since I left in various different ways. And I do think exploring the South Pole of the Moon and building a lunar base and learning more about sustainable living is an effort bigger than myself. So I'm meeting that. I need to help people. My biggest motivator is helping people work together and helping people be better and improving myself. And all of that is what I can do. I also need a lot of challenging work and a lot of different types of work. So in that way, it's been a very good fit in the last 5 years. And I also need to work for an organization that sees me and appreciates me for who I am, and that expects me as a manager to see and appreciate and affirm all of the people who work for me. As we know, that makes people more productive. So I really appreciate that about where I work, and that has now become my standard, right? So that has been consistent amongst all of this. But yes, I have gone from working for the overarching Artemis campaign to working for the Human Landing System with a bunch of people from Alabama, which is a different perspective. And then about a year ago, I got selected to be a branch chief, which is a supervisory position. It's a mid-level management. And just this week, my entire branch is moving to a different organization, and I got 25 new people to manage. And so I'm just coming up to speed and learning about what they do and how to manage them. Still within the Artemis campaign, still have the same bosses. So I'm very happy about it and excited to meet new people. I would have liked maybe 2 years before I switched instead of one, but it'll all be fine.
Yeah. Similarly, when we last spoke on the podcast, you made a comment about how you had reached a point in your career where you were thinking that you would not be selected to serve in a flight director capacity. You had also told me offline a little bit about this dream of being on a flight, literally, you know, growing up wanting to be an astronaut and kind of feeling like you were reaching a point in your career where that wasn't going to be an opportunity for you either. And I'm wondering, it's so great to hear you talk about how your goals are to make an impact, that you're still finding the career rewarding, knowing that you might not hit these sort of major goals that you thought that you had set out for yourself in your career. So can you tell me more about how you are still able to dive in and get that rewarding sense of accomplishment in the work that you're doing, even knowing that, you know, you might not be doing it in outer space?
Yeah. So flying in space would be great. It's a lot of fun. I would love to walk on the moon. That'd be great. At the same time, I am 47. I don't mind saying that. And a lot of the new astronauts selected are in their 30s, because for Artemis, we'll only be flying once a year. And it could be 10 years before you fly. And so they're tending to go a bit younger. So that horse has probably left the barn. And I am okay with that. And for flight director selection, I could still be eligible for that. And every time they have an opening, people ask me if I'm going to apply. And I've not seen enough cultural changes in that organization for me to make that choice. As I said, it's very important for me that I work for people that have similar values and an organization that has a culture that I feel like I can be a part of. So, yeah, even though it doesn't look like what I thought it would look like, and there are certain aspects of console work that I miss, I'm able to find ways to contribute on the daily basis that I can celebrate. And, you know, there's times where I'm listening to two people violently agree with each other and can step in and, you know, translate to get them to understand and move on to the right solution. So again, for me, instead of focusing on a particular career or a particular assignment, I'm focused more on what is important to me. We just took our DISC evaluations, and I'm a DI, so I need, and I have like a side priority of collaboration as well. So I need to work with people, and I need to be doing something that moves forward, and I find ways to do that every day and every week. And you know, I know you've asked me about my 5-year plan now, and it's basically to just be open to opportunities at this point. I don't have a particular target for the next 5 years. It's just, if I see something that is exciting and challenging, or somebody comes to me and offers something that's exciting and challenging and gives me the opportunity to be a part of an organization that has the values that I've said, then I'm open to that.
Yeah.
So it leaves me with a bit of flexibility, and it's not scary at all because I do still work for the government. So I have job security. So, you know, I'm in a very good place where I have the flexibility to move around without much risk. Right.
Jenny, I'm older than you. I won't say by how much, but for both of you, you know, I think one of the reasons I was so excited to have you back was just I think that you both have this wisdom of experience that I personally have learned a lot from. And I think it's amazing to hear folks articulate when they've reached a point in their career where, you know, this might not happen, this might happen, but I'm still finding achievement and satisfaction in all these other ways. So I'm really glad that both of you could sort of share those stories.
One of the things that Jenny said that I say over and over again is, to people, is about being open to the possibility. You know, when I was coming up, your career was a career ladder, and you were only successful if you were steadily moving up. What I've realized is that your career is actually your career monkey bars. And sometimes you swing to the right, and sometimes you swing to the left, and sometimes you even go down and backwards. But that all adds up to moving forward in some way. And so I always tell people, throw out the ladder thing and think about it as monkey bars.
Race the monkey bars.
There's a bunch of different directions.
Yeah, I love that.
Introducing a new BU podcast.
Explain This.
Our new podcast from The Brink explores big and small pictures of research done at Boston University, from microbiology to art history and everything in between. Join us as we interview on-campus experts who break down areas of study and put their work into real-world contexts.
To learn more about us, go to bu.edu/brink.
You both, today and in your previous episodes, talked about the roles of mentors that you had in your lives, professors at BU that had a tremendous impact on you, other folks that have played the role of mentor to you in your career. And both of you now are kind of paying that back by serving as mentors to BU students through a couple different programs. You know, Anthony, you mentioned being a first generation student. You've both been mentors to folks through the Newbery Center, and as well as your schools and colleges on these mentoring programs through BU Connects, which is amazing. I'm curious to know now what that experience of being a mentor and sharing these lessons with others and advice, what have you learned about yourselves in the process? And has that experience made any of the sort of the changes to your lives and careers that you talked about today? Did that experience of being a mentor solidify any of that in your mind? And either way,
I think for me, it's demystified my career and made me sort of think about it through a different lens. And I know absolutely for me, the mentoring has kept me young and fresh, right? Because the people I've mentored, and I think college students, younger people today in general, are much more challenging, right? They're not sitting there and just like at your knee and like, oh, tell me more, Obi-Wan. They're like, well, I don't know if that works for me, or you know, and providing appropriate challenges, right? Which makes me think about, like, am I just spewing a platitude, or is there something there, or maybe I should rethink this. And so for me, the mentoring has been a two-way street, right? It has improved me as a mentor, as a professional, as much as I hope it's helped them sort of navigate some things and some period things. And I think it's also become, you know, mentoring, I think, is much more about the softer skills of navigating the complexity of life in the workforce than it is about, well, let me look at your resume and let me review your cover letter, right? And so I think mentoring has evolved tremendously in my mind over the various mentoring experiences that I've had.
Yeah. Yeah, to Anthony's point about pushing back, I was that person because I never had a singular person take me under their wing or whatever. I always would, I guess, ask a variety of people questions and go through a collaborative process before making a decision. So I'm often the person going, but what about, and I did struggle with that, by the way, with people who were maybe 10 years further along in their career than me, did not expect me to do that. But I'm perfectly okay with it now when people do that to me. And I will often say, look, don't just take my word for it. Go ask a couple more people, because this is just my perspective, right? And for me, like I said, I never had a singular person, neither of my parents. There's nobody in my family anywhere that's an engineer. My dad's a bricklayer. That's the closest we get. My high school counselors were not helpful. And so by the time I showed up at BU, I was kind of used to asking a bunch of people and then trying to make my own decisions. So that's kind of how I've approached it. And there's been a few times in my life, again, a couple BU professors, a few people at NASA, who have really given me some valuable information and wisdom at the exact time that I needed it. And so I just feel obligated to do that as well, right? I want to be the person that I wish I had, and I want to also contribute the way that those people contributed to me. So that's why I mentor. I do find myself also thinking about situations in my career where I spend a lot of energy making people more comfortable with my presence. And as I'm talking to, you know, either first-gen students or people who are traditionally underrepresented in engineering, you know, and we're talking strategies for this stuff, and I'm talking about imposter syndrome and how I still feel it, it helps me to reflect back on my career, first of all, wishing that somebody had, you know, been that direct with me, or that related to me in that way earlier in my career. And then also it makes me kind of stubborn in that at this point, I'm at a pretty high rank and I could happily retire I'm up for retirement in 10 years. I could happily retire from NASA and go into my second career, because as Anthony said, retirement doesn't look the same, and I plan to have a second career at least. And so I have the privilege of being able to make people question their subconscious biases when they're in a position of power and they're making judgments about people. I have a lot more flexibility and freedom to challenge things than the students that I'm mentoring. And it just makes me feel more committed to challenge things within that freedom, even if I get in trouble. It makes me more committed when I'm talking to students and young alumni who are having to navigate those situations now, right?
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank both of you for, I know what we're talking about, like dozens and dozens of students that you've mentored or at least met with and networked with over the last couple of years. And it's a huge thing that our alumni can do, right, for these young people. But beyond that, and we have to talk about this before we wrap up, I got to know the both of you through your role on the BU Alumni Council, which you've been doing for nearly 10 years at a very leadership level. Jenny, you currently serve as the president of the BU Alumni Association and the Alumni Council. Anthony, you are the immediate past president. And I got to know, you and I, we all talked about this a little bit. I know that you always tell people that you wouldn't be where you are today without your BU experience, but I'm wondering, what is it about the university that keeps you both so engaged? You're giving countless numbers of hours, your expertise, your time, and in a lot of cases, your dollars. What should other alumni know about BU that you know that maybe they don't know? Why is this place still so important to you all these years later?
So the same BU culture that, you know, helped me so much and supported me so much is still there. And it's part of a long history and tradition of BU providing opportunities for education to people that wouldn't otherwise get opportunities. In my case, I was first generation. I was a Pell Grant recipient. I'm a female in engineering. All of these things that would make it harder for me to get opportunities at other schools, possibly, you know, BU would give me an opportunity, and BU is still dedicated to that. And I've been more and more impressed with the approaches that BU is taking, as far as, especially with admissions, reaching out to high schools in, you know, traditionally underrepresented areas to recruit students, providing full need without student loans, full need without student loans to Pell Grant recipients. So I actually am mentoring a first generation student who was a Pell Grant recipient, just graduated, and he had the freedom to take a couple months to find the right job for him because he didn't have any student loans. I can't imagine if I had been in that position, right? So I just am impressed with BU's continued commitment and adaptation to the current environment to ensure that we are still providing opportunities for people who wouldn't otherwise get them.
Anthony, what about you?
It's crazy. I was going to say almost the exact same thing, right? That the BU that I went to way too many years ago is still the BU that exists today. It is a BU that is welcoming of all kinds of people. It historically has been a university that has given opportunity to people who other universities or society in general would not give opportunities to. It has evolved, it has improved, it is just, at its core, it's still this incredibly dynamic, diverse urban university that offers kids an education that is unique that they might not be able to get anyplace else. And it just gets better and better and better. And I continue to be blown away about how great it is. I was just at an event here in the Bay Area on Monday night with the Dean of the School of Public Health and was just blown away at the conversation and the intellect and the everything about it. I can't say enough. And with the new president coming in, I think the university is about to embark on an amazing next chapter, and it's time. It's all alumni should be super proud and excited, and engaged and involved, and there's something there for everybody, which is what's so great about it.
Well, again, back to your work on the Alumni Council, I think from where I sit, one of the most impressive things that has come out of that organization directly as a result of leadership from the two of you has been a new Alumni Association scholarship.
That's mostly Anthony's fault, I just want to say. He did an amazing job.
It is the thing I am most proud of. I will absolutely say that like to shepherd that concept from concept mm-hmm. to idea to making it come to life and to the council rallying around it. It is something I am deeply, deeply proud of because it is intended to continue what BU does so well, which is to give students opportunities that might not have opportunities at other universities and colleges, and to continue the legacy of First Gen, to continue the legacy of diversity, to continue the legacy of underrepresented communities having opportunities without the burdens of loans. To me, it is the epitome of what BU is, and it is something that all alumni can support and contribute to and be proud of.
Yeah, well, it's named after the Alumni Association, right? It's the Boston University Alumni Association Scholarship. And I think there are some alumni out there who don't realize that all you have to do to be in the Alumni Association is graduate, right? My husband attends has an alma mater that's an institute that I won't name, but he has to pay a fee to be a part of their alumni association and like purchase a membership or something. At Boston University, you graduate, you're in the alumni association. So the alumni association represents all 380 some thousand, whatever it is now. I lose count every time they give me a new number because it grows. But over 380,000 alumni, all represented by the Alumni Association. And that scholarship represents all of us alumni reaching out and giving a figurative hug to future alumni by making their life a little bit easier. Yeah. So I just think it's beautiful.
Yeah, and something that is consistent between both Jenny and I is our commitment to connecting current students with alumni, right? That the Alumni Association doesn't exist out here someplace. It exists to show and model current students what being an alumni looks like and feels like. And so to forge that connection between this amazing body of alumni and this amazing population of students is something that was super important to both Jenny and I in our roles at the council. And this Alumni Association scholarship is the embodiment of that.
Well, we're really running up against our time, but I want to take another chance to thank the both of you for everything that you've done for BU, but also on a very personal note, I feel tremendously lucky to have the both of you in my life and learn from you as I have. So thank you from me. Thank you on behalf of the university. And thanks for taking time for us today.
Absolutely. And thanks to you and the rest of the alumni staff who do such a good job supporting us and supporting all alumni with programs and activities and all kinds of things to make being an alumni a very special experience.
Thanks again to Jenny and Anthony for joining me on the podcast and for making such a tremendous impact on the BU community. I can't wait to do this again in 2029 and see what everybody's up to then. If you heard something today that makes you proud to be you, I hope you'll join me in donating to the BU cause that means the most to you at bu.edu/give.
Thanks for listening to Proud to Be You. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your episodes. Proud to Be You podcast is produced by Boston University and our partners, Five Tool Productions, a BU alumni-owned, Boston-based company specializing in video production, live streaming, and content marketing. Our theme from artist.io is Think About Lights by Ben Fox. All additional media in this episode has been shared by our guest. To learn more about Proud to BU, visit bu.edu/proudtobu.